You are listening to Bit Podcast, a business podcast series produced by Bitpod on behalf of PKF Malta.
Hello and welcome to the fourth Bitpod for 2023. Today we will be discussing artificial intelligence, and with us today we have Professor Matthew Montebello. Professor Montebello is a full-time professor at the Department of Artificial Intelligence at the Faculty of ICT within the University of Malta. Hello, Matthew, and thank you very much for accepting our invitation.
Hello, good afternoon, and I'm glad to be here.
So, let's start with the first question. So, can you please provide our listeners with a bit of background about yourself?
Well, by profession, I'm an educator. I was trained as a teacher in University of Malta with maths and computing, but eventually I pursued my studies in UK, focusing on personalization of search engines in computer science, and eventually a PhD in UK, focusing on customized education using artificial intelligence. From then on, I got employed at the University of Malta, have been teaching artificial intelligence since 1999, and now I'm the head of department within the Faculty of ICT.
Very interesting. So can you tell us what is AI and what are some real-world applications of it as well?
Well, AI has a number of definitions, but mainly we typically describe AI as those computer tasks that usually require human intelligence. So it's computer systems that simulate humans when it comes to, for example, learning, problem solving, decision making. And since the intelligence is not human, then it is artificial. And that's where artificial intelligence was coined. Obviously, number of applications. We can, for example, give autonomous cars that plenty of people know about, like the Tesla car, for example. But others are image processing, like face recognition, for example, to unlock your phone, for example, speech recognition, like Siri and Alexa, but also virtual assistants online, suggestion programs, like, for example, when you're watching Netflix and another movie or series is recommended based on what you've been watching. That is where AI comes through. But obviously, there are other series. These are all series, I know, but other series like fraud detection, for example, that banks use to check that financial transactions, there are no issues happening, or they try to detect patterns where fraud is happening. Other companies like industry use it for predictive maintenance. They don't wait for the machine to break down, but they use AI to figure out that a machine is struggling, for example. We use AI to, for example, to identify tumors in images and scans and medical diagnosis or drug discovery, for example, or patient monitoring. So, you know, very serious and useful, repetitive, but the machine programmed by humans to do intelligent stuff. And that's where AI can come in very handy in a real world application.
Quite vast. So tying in with this question, are there different types of AI? And if so, how do they differ from one another?
Well, yes, there are a number of different AIs, depending on how much intelligence is applied or their capabilities, for example, but all tend to be learning. And that's what humans do from when they're born. So that's why they're simulating humans. So we try to develop programs that learn on their own and then adapt to the situation. Some of them, which we call reactive machines, for example, like a computer chess game, for example, because games obviously are programmed as well, is a reactive machine that it has very specific programmed intelligence that can beat a human, for example. Others could have a limited memory. So that's a limited memory AI, like the self-driving car I mentioned, the Tesla, for example, or fraud detection system. So they're very focused on a particular task, but they are very good at doing that. Basically, when you have something that is learning, for example, imagine I program a piece of software, giving it thousands of images, and then it can recognize and distinguish between a cat or a dog or a human amongst other humans, for example. So that is what we call learning AI. Same with speech recognition. So I give it a number of recordings, and you can see I'm mentioning a number of images, a number of recording. This is data. This is where big data comes very, very useful. So we can feed the program a lot of data to train it. So this is a word we use, training, to teach And eventually the machine will learn, and eventually we use the words machine learning. Same with, for example, natural language processing. So the machine is not by magic understanding. Alexa and Siri are not magically understanding our language. They've been trained over and over again, so that when we say phone mom, for example, it recognizes the words, they are a pattern, and eventually picks up the word mom, looks for the word mom in your directory and associates a number and dials that number. So these are obviously different kinds of AI that we can use with different, depending on the application. But at the base of them all, obviously there is data, there is learning, there is training, and eventually it can adapt itself to new situations. And we think, you know, that it is intelligent, but actually it is doing some kind of intelligence. Same when you're buying a book, and it recommends other books because 1,000 other people bought that book, so it can recommend other books that these 1,000 people bought. Same with movies on Netflix, for example, that I mentioned. So you watch a movie, you know, another million persons watch this movie and also watch another movie. So it recommends that other movie to you. And you think that that is being intelligent, but it's also all it's doing, it's matching patterns and eventually reacts on that outcome.
Very interesting. So turning now more to the economic aspect of it, so can you let us know in which sectors AI is mostly employed in?
Yes, I referred to some examples, but definitely it is employed in a number of sectors. Industry obviously tries to take advantage of it to make profits, you know, rightly so. And that's where the technology starts developing. So we'll talk about, obviously, how we can push AI to the forefront. But one of the first, obviously, sectors that is very useful, I mentioned healthcare for sure. Obviously, when you're doing medical diagnosis and treatment, you know, or personalized drugs, for example, depending, for example, on your DNA, imagine that. Definitely, it is one major area that the human race can take advantage of. Risk management or trading or customer services. So obviously, finance is another sector where AI is widely employed, but also in retail and e-commerce, you know, by, for example, personalizing your shopping experience or figuring out which books you like or which dresses you like or which movies you like. So it recommends those particular items to you. It can optimize pricing schemes, for example, or for inventory management, for example. So obviously, these kind of applications, they're widely used in retail. But a major sector, for example, is manufacturing. So manufacturing uses it a lot, for example, to make efficient and improve production, for example, or quality control to check that the product is good or is not broken, or there are no foreign bodies in the food, for example. But also, I mentioned, for example, the predictive maintenance of machines, so that manufacturing. Other areas could be transportation, for example, where you can optimize the use of fuel, or like a sat-nav giving you directions, for example, to go from one place to another, giving you shortest distance or shortest time, for example. That's transportation. In energy, for example, optimize energy production. But also governments are using it to improve public services, for example, but also in education. And this is one area where I specialize myself. So using AI to personalize, for example, a learning process or an experience, or to give an example in a particular subject that students are learning using their interests rather than just using any kind of example. So imagine you have a class of 30 students in a class, and instead of giving them one example, the system, an intelligent or a smart system or an AI system, can give them individually an example that applies more to them. One student likes soccer, another likes music, another likes reading. So the examples will be customized and tailored to the needs or interests of that student. And it is found, obviously, that students tend to learn more. So it's improving, enhancing, optimizing. You can see I'm using these words that AI can do. So obviously, I mentioned a number of sectors, but literally, I could mention any kind of sector, not just cars and airplanes and boats and any area which you can think of. I mentioned hospitals and industry, and most probably I can think of going to religion and philosophy, but all areas can take advantage of a smart system.
I agree. So looking at the global situation now, which countries are currently leading the AI race, and is their trajectory expected to persist in the coming years?
if we look at what's happening in other countries, you know, major countries like the States and China and Canada, for example, we see a trend happening. We see this an AI ecosystem where the industry, together with the government and together with the academia, are working in sort of this three dimension. You know, we have the private sector, the industry, we have the public sector, the government, and we have the education component or academia. And obviously, the country needs to invest. Nothing more than that. So it needs to invest in the research and development. It needs to invest in its educational system. It needs to invest into private sector by encouraging more companies. For example, in the States, which is the leading country, I would say, but numerous companies like Google, Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft, and these are industry that are obviously contributing. They have a research and development component within their company. They push in money themselves. And obviously they have major links with academia. So you can see this happening. And they're functioning within a country. So there's the government, which obviously helps them to prosper as well. Same in China. Okay, we think of China as a closed country, but obviously it has invested significantly in AI research and development, okay, investing billions of dollars in AI-related projects. And just to mention a couple of companies similar to Google, there is Baidu, which is a sort of Chinese search engine, Tencent, Alibaba, which you might have heard about, obviously, which is a retail company online. But obviously, these are companies using AI to optimize their services, trying to figure out what a customer needs, for example, or figuring out what you're searching for and tries to sell, obviously, stuff to you. So these are countries. I mentioned Canada with Google and Microsoft, even companies like Uber, for example, which is sort of our Bolt, opening AI research institutes within this country, and the government is obviously encouraging them to do so. Other countries, major countries, United Kingdom, Japan, Germany, France, South Korea, you can see major companies, also Israel, you know, trying to create this strong AI ecosystem where the private sector with the public sector and together with the educational component of academia are working together to obviously to generate more and more investment in AI.
So you mentioned investment in AI research particularly, but are there other predominant requirements a country needs to become a leader in AI as well?
Well, yes, those are the main three, but definitely there are others, yes. One of them I mentioned before, that AI software systems use a lot of data. So having access to this data is very, very important. So obviously, if country has abundant access to data, such as the US and China, the first two I mentioned, these have a natural advantage in AI development. So obviously, even the fact that they are mass countries, let's say compared to Malta, which we have a small pool of potential AI experts, for example, but also of collecting data. So if you're trying to personalize a service in Malta compared with the States or China, which could be just one city, that would be Malta. So you can see their advantage of being big. It doesn't exclude us now. We might talk about Malta later on. But obviously, one of the tricks of being successful, a country needs a skilled workforce. I mentioned academia, a skilled workforce. So imagine our university, which trains, for example, AI students. We used to get 50, now it's going down, further down. So students and number of students are very limited. But in major countries, obviously, the skilled workforce, obviously, has a major advantage. So apart from the strong research and development infrastructure that we can have as well, the skilled workforce, I mentioned the access to data, but also the governments can do its own contribution, for example, by creating policies and support policies, for example, with legislation for equal rights and for how to create an AI system, for example. So obviously, the government can do its part to promote ways of increasing AI research. One of them, for example, is the infrastructure itself. High-speed internet, for example. I know it's private companies, but if the government doesn't allow it within its infrastructure, it won't happen. So obviously, there is the element of industry or private and public sector collaborating, how to improve cloud computing, for example, or advanced computing hardware. So obviously, these are all components that a country will need to become a leader. It needs to create this ecosystem, AI ecosystem, and at the base of it, there are all these elements, the research, the training, the access to data, and the infrastructure.
So we tackled the requirements of AI. So, but then how does AI contribute to the global economy then?
So obviously, governments are not idiots. You know, they're investing simply because there is an economy, a global economy, and a significant contribution to the global economy. So example, the fact that an AI system is going to increase efficiency, for example, that it can automate repetitive and time-consuming tasks, for example, enables companies to be more productive, for example, and more efficient. And this will obviously have a cost savings effect. It will increase output. And as a company, obviously, it can generate, encourage companies to have higher profits. So we can see that the global economy, even of a country, is going to increase. But also, apart from increased efficiency, it could have things that a human, is quite difficult for a human, that a human might miss. But obviously, a piece of software doesn't get tired. AI also creates new business opportunities, for example. Imagine, you know, creating an industry where we can personalize medicines. So you won't go to a chemist and purchase paracetamol, for example, or Panadol. You purchase autonomous vehicles, for example, that we don't have yet in our country, for example, but that would be another new business opportunity. Or having a smart city like in China, for example. How would that change the industry, the tourism industry, for example? So obviously, enhancing customer experiences, including tourists, will increase the global economy of specific countries, but also of the entire world, if that would be possible. So those are some examples of how AI can contribute in different areas. Addition to that, you can see that there is a big growing community and improvement, as I said, in the healthcare industry, the finance, I mentioned the retail and the commerce, manufacturing and transportation. I mentioned also education, but also obviously education. There are private companies that are investing in our country, for example. Yes, the government would be the major player, but obviously there are private and other schools that could be taking advantage of AI as well.
From an economic standpoint, there's this debate that AI can lead to job creation, but it also can lead to job destruction. What's your opinion regarding the subject? And if there is the possibility of job destruction, what is the likelihood of this being reduced? What can we do to reduce this negative side effect?
It's a bit of both, to be honest. You know, like any industrial revolution, you know, when the machines came about, there were demonstrations that they're going to lose jobs, but then new jobs were created. Maintenance people, for example, to give one example. Same with AI, you know, that some jobs will be lost, obviously, because the machine might replace a cashier at a supermarket, for example. But obviously, we're creating other jobs, like a data engineer, that in previous years there wasn't this possibility. So, in fact, when we teach courses in AI at university, we're teaching our students for jobs that might not even exist today, but we're giving them the skills so that in 5 and 10 years' time, they can easily adapt to whatever the job requirements will be at that time. So training and education is very, very important. We don't want to teach them, you know, the famous saying, we don't want to give them the fish, we want to teach them how to fish rather than give them the end product. So once they know how to do and they have the skills, then obviously they can do other jobs in the future. Obviously, new industries and new job opportunities will be created eventually as other tasks that AI software can produce. AI creates new business models, for example, and new ways of working. And this may lead of component. Another component is we're witnessing, for example, in a lot of industries, the importance of to have the human in the loop. For example, as I said, I focus a lot on AI in education, but in no way I see AI replacing the educator or what we call the teacher or the lecturer. So definitely, I use AI as a decision support system to support the teacher rather than to replace the teacher. So you can see what I'm saying here. I'm using AI to empower the human, to empower, in this case, the educator, rather than replace. So that's another way of saying, no, it won't replace the teachers. It won't replace the GP, the doctor. It won't replace the engineer. So some of it might be, you know, what we watch in movies and it scares people. But I think the job displacement issue is a short term until the industry catches up, and it will require differently skilled workforce or people that can easily adopt and adapt to the needs of the AI on the long term eventually.
So it's more of a reskilling rather than destruction.
Yes, which is the third component I mentioned. You know, I mentioned private, public, but education. I mentioned academia, but education is very important.
Yes, I agree.
And now for a quick intermission. At PKF Malta, we are enthusiastic about encouraging startups to flourish. We provide a wide range of professional services necessary for startups to take off, such as assistance with company formation, license applications, setting up bank accounts, auditing, accounting, and tax advice. We've also founded Bitpod, which provides startups with readily available office space. Email us on info@pkfmalta.com to find out more.
And staying in with this subject similar, it's also there's the issue of inequality between countries. So do you think that AI can lead to a greater inequality between rich and poor countries as well?
Interesting. Because, you know, when you asked me about which countries are leading, I mentioned a couple of a country starts to create and put into place policies and strategies, especially, and this is what actually Malta is doing as well. It tries to equate access, for example, to training, equate access to the data. And if a country has that advantage, obviously it can use that to its advantage. So yes, AI has this potential to contribute to the economic growth, as I said, but this could help to reduce inequalities between the countries. How, for example, it could enable countries to improve productivity and competitiveness between them. So it to develop like new industries and markets. But yes, if access to this data and access to the hardware and access to the knowledge and to the reskilling is concentrated to one country, obviously the wealth and power is going to fall in the hands of these large countries or large corporations and countries. Obviously, these have the resources and they can focus on the expertise to develop and deploy AI systems, and sort of they clog the system. So I think the trick, especially if you look at what the EU is trying to do, and maybe other countries will try to do that as well, like the States, for example, is to ensure that these policies and these strategies are in place, that there are the right legislation in place, that everybody has equal rights to data. And in this way, you know, you try to reduce this inequality between the rich and poor countries. We know the history of the world, you know, unfortunately, and it is what it is. You know, countries tend to struggle, other countries tend to keep to themselves. You know, I mentioned China, for example, but if there is goodwill, let's say, amongst EU countries, for example, in our case, in academia, we participate in EU projects where there is a requirement that a project is made up of a consortium from different countries. So there you can see this legislation happening. So this is one way of reducing this inequality as well.
So we talked about the current situation with AI. So taking more of a futuristic point of view, where does AI go from here? And what are the projections for this industry?
First, you asked me about what different kinds of AI. I didn't mention what we dream of. We dream of a machine that thinks on its own. And these are non-existent, you know, strong AI doesn't exist yet. Maybe in 50 years' time, 100 years' time, I won't be here for sure. So obviously, that's what we would like to see, where obviously humans can still control it because humans do the programming of the software. But in the near future, definitely you can see the interface, the way we interface with the machine, instead of as we do using a keyboard, for example, we can speak to it. So natural language processing is one major area. I mentioned it before. Natural language processing basically is the ability of a computer, like Siri can understand you, okay? Like Alexa, I mentioned these examples before. They can understand human language. It would be nice to have it, obviously, understand Maltese as well. But these virtual assistants could be online, these what we call chatbots, for example, or language-based applications is definitely one of the major projections. Another one is image processing. So again, unlocking your phone through your face. What if you unlock your house? Or your bank account, which actually some of the software on your laptop, on your personal laptop, you do. You can use your fingertip, for example. So that is one way of doing it. It can use your voice or your visual. So those are ways of interfacing. And that is one of the projection. A much more natural way to interact with the machine. So that is intelligent in its own right. Okay. Ramifications with people who are challenged, for example, who are challenged physically, for example. So imagine they have access now to the machine without moving their hands. So that is another positive thing of where the projections are going. Another projection, which is usually associated a lot with AI, are robotics or what we call autonomous systems. So manufacturing, like production of cars or IC components, obviously you can see robotics happening a lot, but also in healthcare. We witnessed a surgeon performing a surgery from one continent to another using robotics, for example, or agriculture, for example. Again, another good example where robotics can come in. Another one is when I said the government needs to put the legislation in place. So ethics, a new word I'm talking about, ethics and governance. So obviously, AI ethics and governance need to be very important, and it's becoming more widespread because people are getting conscious of AI systems. For example, ChatGPT in the last weeks obviously caused a lot of havoc, but eventually it boiled down to lack of knowledge. But eventually, if AI software is put out there in an ethical way and the legislation is there, EU and other countries are following it, then the public with the right knowledge shouldn't have any problem with that. So obviously it is very important, and that's one of the other projections that we see more focus on AI ethics and governance as governments and obviously businesses keep on ensuring that such smart technologies, AI, are developed, unleashed, and deployed in a very responsible manner.
It's fair to say that we haven't exhausted yet the full potential of AI, that's for
no,
sure.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
So turning the situation now more onto the local situation within Malta.
Okay.
Is the situation in Malta vis-a-vis AI similar or different to the one observed in other EU countries?
Uh-huh. I gave some clues as I spoke because it's good to give examples from the local scene. But yes, we've become companies, but it's still doing its own share, similar to other EU countries, I would say. Okay, so like other EU countries, for example, we recognize the government, academia for sure, and even the industry recognizes the potential of AI, especially in the economic growth and development. So for example, 4 years ago, 2019, Malta launched the National Strategy for AI, for example, which aimed to establish Malta as a hub for AI and innovation. So it promoted research, responsible and ethical AI. So obviously, it includes initiatives such as developing AI talent and skills. So, you know, all the right components are there. Also, Malta has implemented the EU's GDPR regulation, the General Data Protection Regulation, because it's very important aspect. I mentioned ethics, and when you're using a lot of data, especially data from your users, data protection becomes a big issue, and Malta is following that. So it's putting, you know, the right things in the right places to be one of the players out there. Malta is also a member of the European AI Alliance, for example, you know, which is a platform for collaboration about AI policy at a European level. So overall, I would say that the initiatives and regulations, Malta is approaching them in a responsible way to be considered one of the contributors. I wouldn't say one of the leaders, but yes, a fair player in the AI arena.
So tying in with this argument that you're saying, do you think that Malta has the resources, both capital and human, to eventually become a driver in the sector, maybe one day?
Look, I mentioned this, you know, human resources is a problem. Obviously, we are a small population, limited pool of AI talent. As I said, students, unfortunately, are going down. The population is going down as well. So obviously, compared with other larger companies, but still Malta is taking steps, you know, it's launched initiatives to develop AI skills, for example, and talent, like the Malta Digital Innovation Authority, which was set up a few years ago, the MDIA, obviously created programs and initiatives so that companies can come over to Malta. So obviously there are steps to make up for this lack of human resources, but also it's trying to incentivize companies to come over to Malta, to open business over here, to get foreign experts to Malta, with encouraging tech schemes, for example, as well for the company. So obviously, as a small country, which we have an advantage being between, you know, Europe or Southern Europe and Northern Africa, we have our benefits. You know, we're an English speaking, very friendly population, and that should be in our advantage as well. The human potential is there. Okay, we see it in our students. We see it in the success of our few industries. So the potential is there. So we need to have the right regulation and the right outlook on how to get investment and companies to obviously invest in our country. Having said that, obviously, academia, as I mentioned, is the third component, so very important. Some people question why the government keeps on pushing money into research, but now you know why. That's why we need money into research, so that we can obviously train our students, we can encourage more research and development, and obviously be part of the EU community at the same level, at par with other countries. So obviously, education is very important.
So we are saying that steps have already been taken to reduce this issue with the lack of human resources, right?
Yes, yes.
But it is still not enough. So in your opinion, are there further changes or improvements that need to be made to ensure that both even the current and the future generations are prepared for AI in Malta?
Ara, definitely, I might be biased here, but definitely education, okay? Civic education, I'm not meaning primary education, secondary education, tertiary education, but also training within companies, reskilling within companies, for example, or lifelong learning for people who are already in the job or are retiring. So obviously, these are all kinds of education, but, you know, educating the population is very important. There are other obviously, ways of doing it to undertake, obviously, for future generations. Obviously, how to improve this ecosystem by creating stronger collaborations between academia, government, and industry. So this, you know, this three dimension of a successful ecosystem. Because with the right legislation at the base of that, you can obviously prepare the country. You can prepare the population, especially your younger generation, to undertake and ensure that they adapt to the AI domain. The ethics and the transparency is also very important. So obviously, the men on in the street knows about it now, obviously, and is being scared. Maybe they watch too many movies, for example. But it is very important, I think, to ensure that such software is developed and used in an ethical and a transparent manner. And this can only be achieved through education, but also through creating the ethical standards and guidelines have to be in place. So it has to be a legal thing, policies, regulations that will encourage transparency and accountability. We wouldn't want companies out there or a government out there to take advantage of that. So obviously, there are a number of elements that will make or break our future generations.
I agree. I think education will always be a fundamental pillar for any form of change. So,
yes, exactly.
So, I know we touched upon this very briefly. We said that Malta has some policies in place, but what are Malta's main objectives with respect to AI? Where does it want to be?
Okay, so Academically, I think, looking at the university and looking at MCAS and even private educational higher institutions, no, they're doing their best. They're trying to attract as much more students as possible. So I think we're trying to do whatever can be done. The other two areas, which are the public and the private, let me start from the public, which is the government. So I think it's also in place. So obviously, there are those objectives I mentioned, like developing the regulatory and legal frameworks that are required and necessary to support AI research and development. The legal framework for AI, for example, for blockchain, but also there is the ethical AI framework. So from a public government point of view, the guidelines are being provided, ethical development and use of AI are being taken care of, so that should be fine. Same with the private. So there are companies which are investing. There is also institutions like the Malta AI Task Force, like Mita, who are obviously trying to get more companies to invest in AI and research and development. It boils down to having more local, for example, startups focusing on developing AI applications in good areas like healthcare and finance, for example. And I think Malta has its good share of international companies, and we need to ensure that the environment, the industrial environment in Malta, the government has to ensure that it is available for foreign investment to come through. As an academia, we need to ensure that we're providing the skilled workforce. So you can see this, again, ecosystem working and flourishing, a legal under carpet to ensure that everything is done in an ethical way. So overall, I think the objectives that you mentioned with respect to AI in Malta, I think they're very ambitious, both public and private, and they are taking a number of initiatives, as I tried to mention, to achieve these goals. So once you have this, a healthy environment, what we call a healthy ecosystem, I was mentioning it, for AI innovation, I think Malta can aim to position itself as one of the players, leaders in the development and use of AI in the various sectors, I think, especially compared with the North African continent.
Changing a bit the topic, we've already discussed the positive aspect of AI and how it can be applied to almost every sector, like you were saying. But what are some of the misconceptions about the AI and potential disadvantages that it may bring along?
Okay, I rarely tend to speak about this because obviously I try to be realistic, but we're very optimistic, especially in academia. But obviously, there are negative aspects, and I think science fiction and movies tend to push those out because obviously that kind of stuff sells, I imagine. But if you look at movies, even older movies, usually they portray AI as just robots, you know. I remember a very old movie when I was a young boy where these robots take over and eventually start killing humans, for example. And this is the fear that the film industry tries to push in over and over again, even the latest movies, for example. So the idea of AI replacing humans, even from a job point of view, I think is one of the major misconceptions. You know, as I mentioned, machines that think on their own autonomously, we haven't got to that point yet. One, as I mentioned, jobs are lost, but more are created. And I think in some aspects, especially where there is very important the human touch, I mentioned teachers in education, doctors, for example, in healthcare, you cannot replace a human, okay? You can automate some tasks, but you cannot replace the human touch. You can use intelligent machines to support or to empower the human more than anything. And something that, for example, another misconception, something that AI knows everything and it's infallible. In fact, you know, AI are programs that humans write. And if you give it wrong coding, it won't work fine. It can malfunction. If you give it bad data or biased data, for example, it will work on what you give it. You know, it has input, it has output. So rubbish in, we say rubbish out, you know, that's one of the misconceptions as well. And AI can be used for any kind of company and any kind of country, big or small. So this is another misconception, saying, oh, we're too small, so we try not to look at that. And our companies are too small. No, AI is not only for big companies. I know that big companies and big countries have access to more resources, but small companies can also benefit, for example, okay? So AI tools and services are available for everybody. So obviously with the use of the internet and online, obviously we can put in our share. University, for example, out there as much as the major universities out there. So we can offer our AI programs, we can offer our courses as much as other major universities. So that's a misconception. So I would say the threat of AI on humanity is the major misconception, as you can see in all these examples I'm giving. So what should we do? I think we need a balanced and an informed perspective, again, educating the public out there. And we need to recognize both the potential and the potential benefits, but also we need to recognize and understand the risks, the potential risks associated with AI. Once you know those, you know, you can have your own decision, opinion, and eventually the misconceptions can be reduced. I know that movies are very realistic, but usually it is science fiction. You know, some of these misconceptions are portrayed in these movies. So yeah, I try to give you some examples of what is worth addressing at this point, let's say that.
Another argument sometimes that people make is that we already live in a world where everything is online and we have already less data privacy. So do you think AI will lead to even less data privacy and security, or is this another misconception?
It boils down to the data. Data. I mentioned, for example, the misconceptions and the disadvantages that I mentioned before. One of them is the data itself. If the data is biased, it means the computer or the AI program has been fed only one type of data. Now I'll give you an example quickly. Then it will output according to data. There is a good movie at the moment going on Netflix. It's called Coded Bias. The bias is actually coded within the program. And in reality, it's not the code that was written by a programmer that is biased. It's the data that is fed. So imagine you write a piece of software that recognizes faces. And you train the software using 1,000 image of white male persons. So you can see the bias there happening, white and only male. So the disadvantage is it's being biased that way, and a colored woman is obviously going to be a problem. So the issue of data, how we collect the data, how we process the data, how we use it, how we store it is very important. And this is where data privacy and security comes through. So obviously about our own individual behavior, our own individual interests, needs, preferences, and activities. And it uses that to recommend, suggest, for example, what you get on your Facebook feed, for example, what emails you receive, because you were talking or you were searching about, I don't know, bedrooms, for example, and all of a sudden, you find advertisement coming up in your social media, for example, because the software is creating a profile specific to that persona, to you, to that specific person. So how private is that data? Even worse, imagine if the data of all the patients at our hospital, for example, becomes vulnerable and it's available online. So we can see the dangers of that. But is it the software that is making dangers, or is the humans who are storing it or who are creating the security access to it? Maybe there are hackers. Okay, so the vulnerability to security breaches, obviously, and hacking is there. So, and the exposure to sensitive data is there. And you can see I'm talking about data, data, data. It's not actually the software itself. So it's not the AI system. The AI system that is processing this data becomes a problem. Apart from being a problem, it could be beneficial. For example, we can use the amounts of data, for example, to detect and prevent cyber attacks, for example, or the software on my mail program figures out that I just received a scam email from a false bank, for example. So obviously, it could be used in a positive way, data. It could be used, for example, to mitigate vulnerabilities in the security system of, I mentioned, Mater Dei. So that could be a positive way of how AI can protect the data. Further, for example, an AI system can be designed to respect the individual privacy by limiting the collection. It doesn't allow you to pick up, for example, in the age or in the gender and to see what the trends are, because I'm looking for patterns in the data. So obviously, the impact of AI and the AI systems on data privacy and security will depend mainly on how we collect the data, how we process, but more strongly on how we use it, on how we apply it, and eventually how we store it and where to store it and how long we store it, for example. And this is where the legislation, the EU legislation, the Maltese law come through, for example. How long you can hold this data, how can you use this data, how can you distribute this data. So it boils down to data, data, data. It is very important at this point to approach AI with a, you know, a sort of critical eye and prioritize mainly on data privacy and security, both in the design and the deployment of AI systems. So from a legal point of view, the government needs to put this framework there to be ethically correct, ensure companies are not doing nothing wrong, for example, using the data, collecting from its users and distributing it. It needs to have the correct rights to do it, for example, and this is where we need to pay attention when we say agree, 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 when we install software, for example. I'm sure that people, you know, create a social media account on any social media and agree to all the fine print without even reading it. So obviously, you need to pay attention to what you're doing, because it might be telling you that I can use your photos at any point. I can use your clicks. I can use your likes, you know, when you make a like on a specific thing, because what it's doing, it's using that data to create a very tailored, customized profile about a specific user. It knows that me, Matthew, I like diving, I like soccer, I like running, and it's going to use that to sell stuff to me, for example, just to give you a simple example of preferences of a specific user, then it tends to be more successful. And this is where we need to be very protective of our data. Some people are really afraid of this and they don't use social media, for example, and they stay out, they stay off the grid purposely, which you could do. You know, that you have the right not to be part of this, not to have your data saved, okay, or to have access to your data to see what is being saved about you. There was one case, for example, a French guy where he took a company to court where he wanted the right to be forgotten. He didn't want them to keep his data, to keep storage of his data. The right to be forgotten was very interesting, and he won the case eventually. And obviously, the EU adopted that case as well. So we can see that at the crux of the problem, or at the crux of all this, is the data that is generated. And this is why I insisted that companies and countries that have access to loads and loads of data have a sort of advantage over smaller ones.
I think we touched upon very interesting and vast topics regarding to AI. So it was very, very interesting. I thank you so much for being with us today, Professor Montebello. That was all of my questions from my end. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
No, first of all, you're welcome for all that. I encourage anybody who has more interest, obviously, to come to university. The Department of AI can show some projects, what we're doing, but also we're very fond of collaborating with industry. So any industry out there can collaborate with the AI department, because at some point there is some way of how to change your business processes or your business products or your business services in a smarter way.
Very interesting. So many thanks again for joining us, and I invite all of our listeners to stay up to date with our socials as we will be having other interesting discussions. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Bit Podcast. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter